Okay, you're welcome back to the show. Now, as you would know, there's always pressure on the blood supplies in this country, and many of us over the course of our life would require a blood transfusion. Can you sit over there, Ashley? No. Many of us in our lives will require blood transfusion, and supplies have been dwindling down a little bit as of late. So I'd want to just mention a few of the blood transfusion clinics that are coming up, or their blood transfusion service clinics, I should say. Today, Letterkenny Radisson Blue Hotel, from 6:30 p.m. to 9:40 p.m. Tomorrow, in the same venue, from 2:30 p.m. to 5:10 p.m. and then in the evening from 7 to 9:40. In the Radisson Blue in Letterkenny again on Wednesday, 2:30 p.m. to 5:10 p.m., then 7 p.m. to 9:40. And once again on Thursday, another clinic running from 12 p.m. to 2 p.m. and then in the evening, 4 p.m. to 7:40 p.m. So as you know, they need a certain amount of blood in storage. It doesn't have a massive shelf life, and you never know, as I say, when we might need it. So if you are inclined to donate, please do. Right, okay. Oisín Kelly is on DL debate duty this evening. Oisín, thank you so much for joining us. How are you?
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. Just before we get into it, that old chestnut raised its head again at the weekend. Down GEA, their senior GEA management allowed non-starting players to play for their clubs at the weekend, and the sense being that this is much needed game time for them. And good for Down, good for the players. In Donegal, John Harran highlighted a young lad on the Donegal panel thrown off it yesterday. He, after training, because he played 30 minutes with his club on Friday. And I know there's other teams that had some of their best players sitting on the sideline because they were on the Donegal panel. Yeah. And with the best win in the world, might not actually get a run out, or even if they do, it might be towards the end of a game for Donegal this year, depending on how we progress and what have you. What is your sense of this? Can you see the logic to it? And when you're out chatting and having the debate with GEA guys and girls, what are they saying to you?
Well, clubs obviously want their best players available to them, and there would be a core group of players from clubs that are involved at county level that would be seen as starters or in the match day 26. Now, what Down did at the weekend sort of goes against the grain of the other counties in the country, basically, that they allowed. Now, they didn't allow any of their starting team to field. You would have to look under the real core of it. Was it the actual match day, maybe 20, 21 players that they would use that they were, right, you guys aren't allowed to play, but the rest of you who are on the match day 26 panel that wouldn't maybe get game time, that they would allow them to go and play.
Working with the clubs a wee bit.
We're working with the clubs a wee bit. And it's always good. It's always good for the counties to work with the clubs. But like, we're coming now to a very important stage of the championship. That individual that John mentioned, I don't know who's referring to.
Left the name out.
And rightly so. And rightly so. But the Donegal management may have told the group, right, nobody is playing club, which they are entitled to do. You're in the middle of a split season. They want their county players available for county action. So did the player go against it? We don't know. But obviously that's an issue between the player and the county manager. There is other players that are involved at county level that wouldn't be part of a match day 26, but are part of an overall group that maybe there's 30 plus players training. And down in my own club, there has been one or two players that were allowed to play club that were involved at the senior setup, but they wouldn't have been part of the match day 20 or 21, but they were allowed to play at their clubs. Right. So it's an ongoing debate. Yeah. So it is. Again, you can see that you can understand the frustration with the clubs. You really, really can.
Some other people commented too that some of these players haven't kicked a ball competitively since the start of April, and yet they're probably not going to get a run out for Donegal. Is it balancing? Is it a balance then between, you know, activity versus the risk of injury?
There's that part of it as well. And there's another part to it too. These guys are training at a seriously high level with their county, Greg.
Yeah.
Training that they're not going to get with their club. So that's the benefit of a player also
coming up in drills that aren't being.
Yeah, and we've seen it all. There's players that have come back to clubs after being part of a senior setup and wouldn't have been in a 15 or a first 20. But their physicality has increased. They have come back. Their conditioning physically has increased is a lot better. They've been training at a very, very serious high level, and they're bringing that into a group at club when they come back, and then obviously into the club championship. Listen, you can weigh it up, so you can. But from a county point of view, they will be saying, listen, there are players, it's a split season, we are entitled to do what we want. But then there's the frustration of the club.
And if you're a fan in the stands and you're watching one of your best players sitting on his backside and your team is, you know,
getting beat or they're not playing it the way they should, then you're talking that Johnny here should be included here. And if he was on the pitch and we could get a half an hour and we're going to win this game. Yeah. And we're going to... So it's, you're weighing it up, but it's an ongoing thing, sort of. Yeah. As you said, it, the old chestnut raising its head again. That's the case of it.
Of course, yeah. And just as
I'll tease it out tonight with the two guys in the DL debate, who will have a very interesting view on it.
Yeah, John Gilday and Brendan Kilcoyne, and they'll probably, as you can see it from both sides, they're going to have a busy agenda. You're going to be talking to them. You say you're going to mention that to them. But also looking at the Irish, the All Ireland Football Championship. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I've had a nightmare of a day today, and I'll tell you why. I haven't eaten yet. And that's exactly what it's all down to.
Get the man coffee.
Yeah, no, the coffee's worse because that makes me buzz then. And no, I need to eat. And the Donegal Club Championship as well. That's all coming up after 7 p.m. So what's the story? When's Donegal at next?
Saturday evening at Healy Park in Omagh.
And a win secures a quarter-final spot, such as the way things...
The way things are going and the way we're looking at, like, for Donegal not to make even a prelim quarter-final, it would take a very big result.
But
then it will go
to
head-to-head.
There's only four teams,
and at Donegal are basically guaranteed a preliminary quarter-final. Yeah. So they will have one more game the week after this. So they will. But what will their next game be? Because they are taking on Monaghan, and if Donegal beat Monaghan at Healy Park, they more than likely will get a home quarter-final. And that is off the basis that Derry are going to beat Clare. So Donegal, a home prelim quarter-final is what I'm saying, Greg, because the team that finishes top goes straight to the quarter-finals. The second team that finishes in the group will have home advantage and a prelim quarter-final, with the third team also in the prelim quarter-finals, but they will be away from home. Mm. You could end up in Tyrone, you could end up in Armagh, you could end up in Dublin, and there's a chance that you could end up in Kerry if you finish third. So it depends on who finishes second in the other group. Roscommon as well as a team. But if you finish second, you're going to have home advantage. Which will be a huge thing. And then if you could get a one at home, that would take you through then to the quarterfinals. So there is still a lot. There's a lot to play for here.
If there is momentum at the moment, it's upward.
Yeah.
Right. You know, I mean, I don't think I'm being overly optimistic here. There were really good signs in the last game.
There
were
very positive signs.
That were moving in a direction that's not backwards. Because it did feel we were going backwards for quite some... And listen, I know there's people listening, sorry, from across Ulster. I want to say Donegal, just because that's where I happen to be from. But there's still an awful lot of local interest even outside Donegal in this competition. Yeah.
There was a lot of positives from the game against Derry. Certain aspects of it were very, very good. There's still that slight concern that we were caught open and didn't track the runners for the three goals. We could have conceded more goals. That's just a worry, but I'm sure Aidan O'Rourke and his management team have highlighted all this. They've looked at it, but there was a lot of positives in that game that you can bring forward. And Monaghan are sitting top of the group. They're ahead of Derry on score difference at the moment, but we're going to Healy Park in Omagh. It's a neutral venue. And if Donegal can build on those positives from the last day, they'll be in with a shout. They'll be in with a shout against Monaghan. Because if you take the goals out of the Derry match, you are...
What have your... This is completely separate too. Because you, compared to me, get to see the full pitch when you're out commentating at games, whereas I, for the most part, end up having to watch things on the TV for various reasons. What's your view on, and particularly Armagh, but others, the goalkeeper playing as a 16th man outfield? There is people that feel that this is actually going to become the norm. You know, we're going to go
the norm at the minute, Greg.
But it's just like just 16.
There's not
outfield
too many counties
players.
Now. Of the big counties, there are not too many of them that are not doing it. But it's particularly an Ulster thing.
Yeah,
I've no problem with it.
Really?
I've no problem with it. The way the game's been played at the moment, I have no problem with it. And it's another angle that the groups are bringing into
there
games
are some
to go
people
to play as the additional man. And all it is, like, you look at Sean Patton's a different style of keeper to to Oran Lynch at a Derry. Oran Lynch was involved in a few things for Derry the last day, but like he commits a lot further forward and gets involved in the action more, which is very, very risky. It's very risky, and he was caught out once or twice in the last couple of years. But Sean Patton's involvement up that far up the pitch is more controlled.
So but would you be in favour of, and there will be, if they're not already, some people calling for it, that there is a line beyond which the goalkeeper can't advance?
It will probably come at some stage, yeah. Yeah. It will probably, and it depends how the game has evolved at that stage, Greg. So it has.
It has to become the actual norm and more goalkeepers getting more involved in more advanced positions.
Like, I do get frustrated. I do get seriously frustrated with 15 men behind the ball. And that was very much the case the way Derry was playing the last day in Ballybuffet. And likewise, Donegal have done that at times as well. And when
it works well, it's fantastic.
When it works well,
it's frustrating too.
It
breaks down.
Like, if you have two teams that can work that system very well and two teams that can counter and break at speed, it is fascinating to watch when they're coming back out. But it can be so frustrating at times. And even Greg, you can have 15 of your own men inside their own 45 defending, which is seriously frustrating at times to watch. So it is. Mark McHugh's got a great one, that there should be at least three players at all times in the opposition half. And that's going to open up the space. And that's going to allow for more of a free-flowing game. That we talked about, and Brendan has highlighted on the DL debate along with you, that he's so frustrated, particularly with club football at times, the way it's played, because it's mirroring what they're doing at county. We wanted to see the ball kicked in a lot more, so we did. If that was to be implemented and you were to have three players in that position half at all times, and the space is going to open up, kicking the ball back to the good old kicking days of the football.
I just think, though, when you're trying to make rules to create the glory days of football, you know what I mean, there's something amiss there, because that's really what you'd be doing.
It's not about glory days of football. It's about an entertaining factor as well for the GAA. Yes, it's about the game, but there has to be an entertainment value on top of this as well.
But we would
Greg.
Agree, would we not, that if you go
and
back
for the betterment of the game,
if you go back 10, 15, 20 years, you would see better games of football. But now we're having to create rules to try
and the keeper always stayed in the nets 10, 15 years ago.
Just a couple before I let you go. This is Inter-County Championship Tournament. The manager needs a fit panel and he is the boss. A player can get hurt when playing for his club. Come on, Dunan, I'll keep a good defence. I don't agree, Oisin. Lads playing at club level training overtrained. I'm not sure you said that.
I didn't say overtrained.
No.
I said they come back in a better condition.
Yeah.
They're well trained.
Yeah,
there's a level of training at county level that they're involved in. And you would think that there's benefits coming from that back to the club when they return.
Yeah. I think everyone's going to take a while now to come down after the hurling to watch football again. It was so spectacular yesterday.
Hurling's a fantastic. I've done the Nicky Rackard final a couple of weeks ago, Croke Park. To set up in Croke Park, hurling is an unbelievable game. The skill level is fantastic,
athleticism, bravery. Is there another sport that matches it?
I don't think there is. And rugby would come up there as in for bravery and things like that, but the actual skill level, like when these guys are knocking a ball,
you have to be trained to play rugby.
It is a fascinating sport.
All right, to
watch it live.
So the DL debate is live after 7 o'clock.
Tonight, Brendan Kilcoyne, John Gilday, two men that know Donegal club football very well. The draw took place last Thursday, so we're going to tease out a couple of those fixtures with the big game, obviously, in round two, a repeat of last year's final, the defending champions Niamh Connolly and St Unions. It's too early in the competition.
That's if you're from Glen Teasdale or anything.
Well,
I know what you mean.
Listen, is it too early in the competition to have a big game? Is the result going to have any sort of impact on how the championship's going to lay out? We don't know. We'll ask the boys. We'll tease it out.
Exactly. It's going to be a really interesting conversation. And you're live tonight, aren't you?
Yeah.
So it's a fully interactive show as well. Don't forget, when you're listening, get involved in the conversation as well there. 086 60 25,000. And if you want to text in now and just put DL debate in front of the text, and we'll know exactly how to get it to Oisin then. It's your sport, of course. Lots and lots of you, tens of thousands of you love it. So get involved in the conversation about it with John, Brendan, and also Oisin. All right, back with more after these. I'm just wondering why our county councillors aren't on this morning calling the fire chief out for having no contingency plan in place for the fire brigade strike. Joe McTaggart Well, I can't go on to read the rest of that, but suffice to say that they believe, now I'm not sure if there is a contingency plan in or not, we'll double check that. Maybe this is coming in from someone in the know, but as I say, we'll just double check to make sure that is the case. Right, okay. It's time for our Monday Focus, and we're going to look at an issue that comes up regularly, and you can understand exactly why, I'm sure, about mental health. And it's mental health in men. It's part of Men's Health Week, which runs from today, the 12th, until the 18th of June. Mental health in men continues to be a taboo subject. There's a great deal of focus on men's physical health, but not enough on their emotional, psychological, and mental well-being. We're joined on the programme now by CEO of Mental Health Works, that is Noel McDermott. Noel, thank you very much for joining us. I appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me on. It's great to be here with you.
Yeah, what are the most common mental health issues that are facing men?
Well, there's a sort of gender split here, which is why I think it's important to look at it. So women often present with what are called the common mental health problems, such as anxiety and depression. And men often end up at the more severe end. Men are overrepresented in, for example, suicide statistics. Three quarters of suicides are men. And currently at the moment, with the cost of living crisis, we know that for every 1% increase in unemployment, there's a 0.8% increase in suicides, and obviously three quarters of those are men. And we think that part of that is this culture that guys have of not noticing that they need help at an early stage. And so they end up in a really dark place where they feel like they can't get out of it.
Just in relation to the statistics on suicide, and thankfully in Ireland, the coroners are leading a piece of work where we'll actually get a better sense of numbers, because that can drive policy and change, hopefully. But are men more likely to suffer with their mental health, or are they more likely to consider suicide? Because as you say, you know, there's a 3-to-1 ratio there. So and also too, you could dig down deeper and you might find that men are likely to take their lives in different ways to women for different reasons and what have you. So is mental health issues more prevalent in men, or are they more likely to see suicide as an option?
There's a combination of factors. The first is they don't get help soon enough. And so with anybody with mental health or psychological disturbances or struggles, the sooner you get help, the quicker you can get rid of it and the less severe it's going to be. If you think of a mental health problem untreated, it just becomes more and more chronic. And that's what guys do. They don't sort of value or place importance on those early signs of struggle. The second thing is that there is a gender split. Women will tend to use self-harming and suicide as attempts, or taking the life as attempts, as cries for help. And the methods that women use are less permanent, are less disastrous. Men tend to reach a point where they plan it very carefully and the methods they use are very effective, and they're unlikely to survive the choice. So things like single occupation, automobile accidents, walking out into the sea with no hope of rescue, etc. These types of things are very well planned and unfortunately very successful. And there's very little way back from them.
Noel, before we get into some of the early signs and what have you, just a question for you, given your expertise. Are we having the conversation correctly? Because we do know that some conversations can be triggering, and you'll see trigger warnings on certain topics and what have you. Are we satisfied that when we speak about this publicly, or how we're speaking about it, that it's helpful, that we are reaching someone to make that first contact, as opposed to, you know, maybe putting two people over the edge, if that makes sense? Do you know what I mean? I just want to make sure that
you're not going to push somebody over the edge.
No, I don't mean literally.
You're just not emotionally either. It's really nothing to worry about. And the evidence is quite clear that you start talking to people directly to them, particularly guys, about what's going on inside their head and if they thought about hurting themselves, and you drastically reduce possibility that it's going to happen.
Okay, good stuff.
It's a rumination, people thinking about it inside their own heads alone. We call it rumination because it does, it ruins you. The more you talk about these things, I guarantee you the evidence is 100% clear that you reduce risk absolutely significantly.
Now, the early signs, early warning signs of mental health problems in men, because as you said earlier on, the sooner that you recognize there is an issue or something that you need a little bit of help with and seek that help, the better. You know, I think lots of people listening will have had those moments, you know, whereby they don't feel this, something feels off and then they deteriorate from there. So what are the early signs for people to look at in themselves, or is it for loved ones to look out in people close to them? I don't know, whatever you think.
Yeah, I mean, the lack of insights is common when we have psychological distress. And I suppose we go into sort of survival mode, don't we, and overestimate our capacities to cope. One of the early warning signs is just look at what's going on in the world. If there's loads of horrible stuff happening out there, it's going to have a negative impact upon you. And you should be feeling rough about it. And you should be thinking about getting extra help. That's just like absolute standard stuff to everybody. So at the moment, we've got all this stuff going on around money, etc. So really, folks, you should be self-caring much more, everybody. And the types of things that show a human, and this is guy or woman, doesn't really matter, the types of things that tell you a human is suffering are these. Sudden changes in mood or outlook. So we all have a sort of background noise emotionally, the way we are, our outlook. That changes. That's a sign there's a problem. Sudden changes in sleep patterns. You know, you sleep too much, you can't sleep at all. Sudden changes and dramatic changes in appetite. Again, that's telling you the human organism is suffering. For guys specifically, you might see more alcohol involved. You might see, this is all true for all humans, more isolation, but in particular guys, when a social animal, a human being, isolates, that's a disaster. That's an absolute disaster, because we are designed to be part of the herd. That's where we get all our health and well-being from. And so if you see people withdrawing, that's a real sign. Guys, you might get aggression and violence as well, is normalized as part of male culture, and you may see a spike in that. 10% of people with depression have comorbidities around what we call dysregulation, losing your temper, getting violent, stuff like that. So those are the types of things, and that's true for a kid, that's true for an adult, that's all humans across the planet.
Yeah. So how do you talk to someone in a constructive way to maybe give them an opportunity to speak to you or to relate what they're feeling? So rather than saying, listen, is everything all right with you? And they go, yeah, yeah, everything's all right. You know yourself, dragging the devil by the tail or whatever it might be, right? So how do you best way to formulate a conversation without probing, but to open a door that they can say, right, I'm ready to actually maybe just to say how I'm feeling to someone?
Yeah, well, we call it modelling. And the best way to get somebody to open up is open up yourself. Model what you want. Be what you want to see in somebody else. Do it without expectation. So talk about your own stuff. If you're like blokes talking to blokes, this really works well. You're not going to be intrusive, I promise you. And if you are, they'll pretty quickly tell you to get lost. So don't be under any illusions about it. Activity-based stuff, particularly with blokes. Don't go in all guns blazing. Right, you've got to tell me what's going on inside your head right now. It's not going to work. So when you're out playing footy or even having a beer, whatever it is, you're getting involved in an activity, then you can drop the subject in that way. It's like at the side of your eye type of approach. Do you know what I mean? Rather than directly on, just sidle up to it nice and gently. Also, you know, just openly talking about things like, you know, modern psychological therapies are nothing like the old Freudian stuff. You're not lying down talking about mum and dad. You're getting practical tools and resources when you do modern psychology.
So
that's
then
really important stuff.
If you're the person, then when someone does try that, you know, because of your state of mind, because maybe your temper's a bit shorter or you're slightly more intolerant, you push people away. How do you talk to another person then? Now, we're going to get to the help you can get outside of a community or whatever. But then how do you talk to someone that you're not feeling well. So how do you speak to your wife and talk to them about how you're feeling without fear that they will judge you, that you'll be seen as weak, that you're putting pressure on them, that you become a burden, that you become a problem, yeah. Which you won't, right? Okay, but I'm just trying to speak directly to the fella who's harboring something at the moment. Yeah. And you know what? After this conversation, Noel, if they speak to someone or open up, the weight off their shoulders almost instantly, yeah. Just in that time, they would not believe how they will sleep tonight. Some people, not everyone, don't get me wrong, right? So talk to someone who needs to talk to someone around them and say, look, I just need to tell you, things aren't brilliant at the moment.
Well, I think the biggest fear that guys have in particular is that they'll become a burden. And the reason why they withdraw and don't share this stuff is because they're genuinely worried about being too much bother, particularly for their wives, for example. And blokes are still the main breadwinners and all that sort of stuff. And they're really anxious about this stuff, and they're really anxious about not being able to provide. So what I would say is this, that 75% of communication is nonverbal. And I promise you, you've already told them that you've got a problem. You just haven't put it into words. So you're already worrying them. When you tell them, put it into words, you are removing the worry. You're not adding to it. It will be, in 95% of cases, even more in my experience, there's a big sigh of relief. Oh, finally, you're talking about it. I knew there was a problem. I could see it. And I thought I was really worried. I'm glad you told me. And that's the reaction you get. In that small percentage of cases where you get a negative reaction, ignore it and go on to talk to somebody else who'd give you the positive one.
Yeah. And there's no one listening to this program this morning who isn't incredibly important to people, important to the community, yeah. important yeah. to family, that family would be devastated if anything happened to them, or they'd be devastated to think that they were struggling alone in something. We have all the differences in the world, and we've seen it more than ever, I think, Noel, lately, you know, with people arguing about stuff and people polarizing their views. But bottom line is as soon as something happens, we circle the wagons, we're there for each other and we help each other, and everyone is so important, you know. And I just hope everyone listening, and particularly if they feel vulnerable at the moment, realize how important and how devastated we are if we are to lose them.
Well said. I couldn't agree more. That's exactly spot on. And the thing about psychological distress is that it makes you feel like you're on your own. But folks, you're not. That's just a feeling. It's not a fact.
It's not real.
The fact is you're connected, and people will be devastated if they feel that they weren't able to help you, or that
people,
you didn't trust them.
Every year, hundreds and hundreds of complete and utter strangers jump off a pier to save someone who's struggling on a paddleboard or whatever it is. And it's the exact same with your mental health. If you're struggling, even strangers will want to help you and see if you're okay. So it's just everyone's so important. And I just
the thing that surprises everybody, as soon as you start talking about this stuff, I promise you, then everybody will say to you, yeah, I've been there. I know exactly what you're talking about. I've had this as well.
In terms of getting help, a lot of people could get assistance by just going to the GP. Especially if they go early. You know, it doesn't necessarily reaching out for help or doesn't necessarily create a chain of events. And we talk about the emergency helplines, which are great, and then we talk about people that don't need them. But there's a lot of people in between. Go and have a talk to your GP and saying, you know, the thoughts are running through my head all of the time. I can't sleep. There are amazing, relatively mild medications that can offer people.
There are amazing modern psychological therapies. You don't really need medication. They're more effective, actually, the evidence is. So like CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy. Yeah. The guidance on that is 12 sessions and you're done. And it's practical, life-changing sessions, tools and resources and ways of thinking about things that, yes, if you implement, you change your life permanently and you'll never have any sort of problem.
And you're perfectly right. All I was trying to highlight is that there's a plethora of things. Do you know what I mean? It's not...
Huge numbers of things. And also people like the Samaritans, for example. Everybody thinks you can only phone the Samaritans, when you're desperate. Actually, they love it when you phone up when you're not desperate. I promise you, they're like, great. Oh, fantastic.
And
really
they
good.
Literally
no, let's talk.
Are in the business of the, they've turned up to help people. That's what they want
That's
to do.
Right. That's right. Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. And total strangers will help you.
Right. So, Noel, I hope through our conversation we've reached a number of persons that realize how important they are, how much everybody cares, and how there is a pathway to start and to feel better. And as I say, it could be getting involved in exercise, a men's shed, whatever it might be. But there's a lot of people rooting for everybody. You know, we're very tight. Okay, I'll read out some helplines too a little later on. Noel, thanks for your time. I appreciate it greatly.
Thanks for inviting me on, mate. Have a great day.
Bye-bye. You too. Have a fantastic day. Okay, that's Noel McDermott, CEO of Mental Health Works. If you want to get involved in that conversation, 086 60 25000, 086 60 25000 is the WhatsApp and text line, or give us a call on 074 91 25000, 074 91 25000. Right now, Nicola Sturgeon's declared she's innocent after 7 hours of questioning in police custody yesterday. The former First Minister of Scotland was arrested as part of the investigation into SNP finances. Sturgeon called the situation deeply distressing. Katrina Stewart is columnist and writer for The Herald and freelance broadcaster, and delighted to welcome you, Katrina, onto the programme. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you for having me.
Was this anticipated, that Nicola Sturgeon would find herself arrested and questioned?
There's been quite a long run-up to this. The police investigation into the SNP party finances has been ongoing since early 2021. And in April, there were 2 arrests of very senior party figures. There was the arrest of Colin Beattie, who was the then party treasurer, and also, of course, of Nicola Sturgeon's husband, Peter Murrell, who was the SNP chief executive. Nicola Sturgeon was the sort of third person that would be involved in the SNP finances. So there had been a lot of speculation about whether she might be arrested as well, whether she might be questioned. So it wasn't a huge shock, but the timing certainly was a surprise. Yesterday, I think there were a lot of Scottish political journalists who were caught on the hop and who were having to come in on a Sunday to cover this story, because there had been no sort of foreshadowing that this might happen on that particular day.
And what is the focus? You hinted at it there, but just for those who aren't aware, what is the focus of this investigations as it relates to the SNP's finances?
So the SNP raised £600,000 in donations to the party, and that money had been raised supposedly specifically for campaigning around a second independence referendum. And of course, we haven't had a second independence referendum. We haven't had that campaigning. So there had been concerns about what had happened to that money. There had been concerns about transparency around SNP finances. And there were several complaints made to the police in early 2021. So that police investigation was launched 2 years ago, and it has been quite a slow burn. But now it seems to have sort of picked up pace quite a bit. And in April, we had those extraordinary scenes of the police tent in Nicola Sturgeon's garden, of police standing guard outside and officers bringing out boxes of documents from both Nicola Sturgeon's home and from SNP party headquarters. So it has been a really big story here, and really difficult for the new First Minister, Humza Yousaf, because, of course, he's trying to find his feet. He's trying to set out what he wants for the party, and he has this shadow looming over him of the former First Minister.
Now, mudsticks. So even if this investigation plays out where everybody's exonerated, the damage is happening now in real time. How damaging is this to the SNP, and how are they handling the PR on it?
There's been a lot of talk over the past 24 hours about how the SNP are finished and how this is fatal for the party. And I just think that that's over-egging the pudding slightly. There's a lot of goodwill among the public for Nicola Sturgeon. There is a lot of strength of feeling about independence. So I think actually for some people, seeing this all play out will actually strengthen their feeling towards the SNP, because they feel that this is perhaps unfair, or that Police Scotland have taken things too far. But also for Nicola Sturgeon, she's a very, very cunning and smooth communicator and operator. And yesterday she put out a very firm, slightly bombastic statement, which seemed quite bold in light of contempt of court restrictions that have kicked in now that she's been arrested. But she put out this statement yesterday saying that she's been left really distressed by the arrest. She's emphatic that she's innocent of any wrongdoing. And in releasing that statement yesterday, she's managed to really successfully wrestle back messaging. At the front of every single Scottish paper today is running with the words, "Sturgeon, I'm innocent." Mm. So if you're looking at a newsstand in Scotland this morning, that's the message that you're getting. So she's very successfully managed to wrestle that back and play it to her own advantage.
Yeah, an interesting analysis could be made as to how others in the political realm try and get the same kind of coverage, but in a very sort of vocal and in your face, this is a stitch up way. And then you have the way she is doing it. And very finally, is there a time frame as much as can be determined on this in investigation? Because this is a cloud, obviously, hanging over Nicola Sturgeon, the SNP, but perhaps even to some extent politics in Scotland. So have the authorities given any indication as to when they want to see this wrapped up?
No, I'm absolutely sure that Hamza Yousaf, the new First Minister, would be delighted if there was a time frame. There have been calls from some people in opposition parties and in the SNP for Nicola Sturgeon to resign the party whip until this is all settled. But the problem is we don't know at all when it's going to be settled. The investigation has been running for 2 years. There's absolutely no sign whatsoever of when it might conclude. So to step down and wait for a conclusion, you know, it could leave Nicola Sturgeon waiting for a very long time.
Katrina, thanks so much for your time. It's been lovely having you on the programme. Have a lovely day. Katrina Stewart, who is columnist and writer for The Herald and a freelance broadcaster. Right, okay. I don't really think we are fully in tourism season yet. In my view, and I'm open to correction on this, it kind of feels like when schools finish. And we're inviting people into our beautiful county and to spend their hard-earned money. And if they need to spend a penny already, the problems are starting to emerge. Toilets not working, one toilet open when there should be two or three. Toilet paper mess absolutely everywhere. If you've experienced that out and about, get in touch with us. Councillor Micheál Colm McGillan-Asbaigh has been out and about himself, and we're going to focus on the situation in Burton Port, the state of the toilets over there at the weekend. Máirtín Mhaith, Micheál, thank you very much for joining us.
Máirtín Mhaith, did you like to start? Look, it's really unfortunate, but this is a common theme that happens when there's an increase in the footfall into beautiful West Donegal and Gaeltacht, and there's massive work being done in Al Jaharan over the last couple of years. There's more work to be done with the regeneration project that's taking place with Irish Water Skating worker as well. And the footfall to our islands were only after launching last week the Cossangarum, the Blue Ways. That's going to be a massive game changer for this part of West Donegal. But our toilets are something that we will all need to use. It is something that is very basic, no matter where you go, say across Europe or anywhere else. I myself, who travel to the Basque Country and Catalonia and other countries, I'm just back from speaking at a gig in Paris, and there were toilets everywhere, spotless and clean. But yet here in Donegal, it seems to be an issue every single year. The toilets in Al Jaharan, we saw it at the weekend, and I'd like to give a recognition to Dennis Ogden Haig for alerting me early and offering to clean it up. But the public shouldn't have to do that. The public should not have to be doing that. We as a council, as our responsibility to provide a service and a high level of service. And when it comes to public toilets, we're not doing that. We're not doing that in relation to Maharorti. Yeah. There's a whole problem there. And still, we haven't seen the toilets open to the public yet. And the council are nowhere near the mark. The very fact that they're just putting a toilet there, which is temporary granted until the works are finished, but they think that's enough. It's not enough.
Okay, well, before we get into that, right, I mean, I would love us to be able to embarrass people into not doing that, doing this, and otherwise to appeal to the public to say, please respect these toilets. But that's not going to work, right? We can try it, but it's not going to work. So this comes down then to observation or maintenance. And I genuinely feel that we in this county sometimes do not provide services because we don't want the hassle of maintaining them. And I don't think it's just public toilets. So what is the council's strategy in maintaining toilets that they're responsible for? Because I think that's the key critical issue here.
Yes, it's very, very simple. The strategy is this, that they expect the public to do it for free through community groups or else people who are on extremely low wage through community involvement schemes to clean up our, without me saying it. That's any first world council should be operating, expecting people to clean up toilets for the public for nothing. That's not working. And if you look at other councils, you know, that's not how they all operate. And I think that we fail desperately when it comes to the likes of public toilets. Like it says, everybody will need to go to the toilet, no matter where you are. And to expect the private sector, which to do restaurants, bars, to provide that service, it's not working. And the public expect more, far, far more. We see, and I know myself, when I travel down from Brittany into the west coast of France, right across the Pyrenees in the Basque Country, right at that motorway, there's even lay-by for you to lay and take rest and use a toilet. There's not there but a few other benches. Here, we don't even have lay-bys, mind toilets.
Yeah, the line's breaking up on us a little bit, but the world now has got incredibly smaller, and of course, a lot of the activity at our beaches is people from within the county or the region going to them, but there are tourists coming up here. They all have a phone in the hand. They all can take photos. They can all leave reviews on TripAdvisor and Google. This is an embarrassment for the county, one which we can't just keep talking about year after year after year. If more resources, or maybe it's at budget time it needs to be discussed, I don't know. But we need a proper plan and strategy for the public maintenance, the council maintenance of public toilets. We need a proper strategy to stop this becoming an annual affair every single year.
Absolutely. And if you look at what our strategy has been in terms of tourism, over this last X amount of years from West Donegal, our islands, our beaches, our mountains, our rivers, our forestry, we are calling for people from right across the Western world and beyond to come to Donegal because of what we have to offer. But yet, unfortunately, similar to the camper sites, once they arrive, the services aren't there. And that's not good enough. And I think it'd be worthwhile asking the director of Environment to come on Radio Nigel tonight or Highland Radio. And I'm quite content to come on as well. And what the other councillors and members of the public can discuss this, because the public expect more. And I'm not making an excuse here for the council either, but it also needs to be looked at the fact that the Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael government are not funding our council adequately. But at the same time, we can't continue to expect the public to pick up our mess for nothing.
Councillor Micheál Colum, thank you very much indeed for that. Have you a view on that? Those are the public toilets in Burton Port in a terrible state. We had some messages in from Rathmullen, but I didn't read them because they might be in this box, so I'll dig them out for tomorrow. I'm picking sheets of paper up from my left and putting them into the right, and I think I might have picked them up having not read them. Right, what do you think about this? The Polestar roundabout in Letterkenny. If you're from Letterkenny, you're very familiar with it. If you have to travel through or into Letterkenny, I'm sure you'll know the Polestar roundabout. It's the main roundabout where a lot of the traffic problems are. It's the junction of some very busy roads, and they're going to install traffic lights. So traffic light installation begins at the Polestar roundabout on the 19th of June at 7 p.m. to 5:30 a.m. for approximately 10 weeks, positive traffic control will be in place with diversions. The sequence of work shall be as follows: Port Road Island Road Crossing, Remelton Road Island Road Crossing, Central Island Road Crossing, Port Road Island Works, Remelton Road Island Works, Neilteal Blaney Road Island Works, Four Lane Road Works. So, if this, as it appears, that traffic lights will control the traffic at all times or at peak times, I don't know, at the Polestar roundabout, what do you think? Now, that means between the Dry Arch roundabout and the Polestar roundabout. There'll be two sets of lights on the four lanes, and then you'll come up to lights actually at the Polestar roundabout. I wouldn't like to work out the sequence to make this work, but listen, it could be a positive development. So if you're a road user, as many of you are, be it in the driver's seat or the passenger seat, do you welcome the fact that, in what form, I'm not 100% sure yet, but from the 19th of June, traffic lights will be installed at the Polestar roundabout. 086 60 25,000, 086 60 25,000, or give us a call on 07491 25,000. And just a word for you, if you're listening to this program on the podcast, a good morning to you, good afternoon, whenever you're listening to it. Feel free to text in as you're listening. We can pick up the text messages. They can still form part of the show. You don't have to listen live. And that goes to you night owls, or those working at night who listen to the replay. It's replayed at 1 o'clock every single night. If you're listening as well, just because we aren't live, it doesn't mean that you can't WhatsApp or text in. Again, we can pick up those texts and WhatsApps the following day. So you can still be involved even if you're listening to a delayed recording of this. Again, that number, 086 60 25,000. And just to remind you, of course, if there's anything that you want to watch back, you can watch this show. I think YouTube's the best place for it, to be honest with you. Highland Radio Ireland, and pretty much every show we've done over the last 4 years is there in one form or other. Hopefully the production quality has increased over that time. But anyway, be that as it may. So no excuse not to be involved, whether you're live or listening on record. All right, that's where we leave it for today. Thank you very much to Caroline Orr, who researched and produced the show, and Niamh working her socks off on the programme as well. We're all back with you tomorrow morning at 9. Stay tuned. John Breslin's up around the Northwest after the news at 12.